Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Football Weekly season finale in the top division. Like Peter Andre before them, Premier League splits with their beloved Geordie. Bare-chested antics, line-up of big boobs, a bitter departure. It's all so familiar, but no less tragic for all that. Elsewhere, forget that team talk of Man City. Phil Brown produces an even worse on-field performance as Hull survive. Abroad, hungry like the Wolfsburg, Felix Magath's side show Man United how title winning's done. While in Italy, it's thanks for nothing, Captain. The Milan fans who don't love Maldini poop his goodbye party. And Toro go all raging bull with a massive post-game bust-up at Torino-Genoa. There's the playoffs, the Gills and Firewall FC. Huzzah for Rangers from the appropriately named Scott Murray. Your post, and we look forward to Wednesday's big game in Rome. Knife-edge drama on the road to glory, and that's just the walk to the stadium. All that in Football Weekly. Hello, everybody. It's a special bank holiday Monday Football Weekly with a pretty special lineup, actually. There's Barry.
Hello.
Hi, Barry. Raphael Honigstein.
Hi.
Hi, Raphael. Scott Murray, rare appearance from you.
Hello there.
Hi, Scott. And Paul Doyle.
Hi, James.
Hi. You once robbed Akon's limousine.
Yes, I did, yeah. I was attending a Puma event, Puma-sponsored event in Berlin.
Right.
And they flew me over from London to Berlin, and the guy from Faithless and Akon were on the plane as well.
Uh-huh.
And when we touched down and came out of the airport and everything, there was a man from Puma waiting with a limousine. And maybe because I've got a very high opinion of myself, I thought it was for me.
Right.
So, and he obviously wasn't familiar with the musicians either, otherwise he would have noticed that I'm neither Akon nor the guy from Faithless.
Right.
So he let me get into the limousine and drove me to the event.
How ironic.
When the limousine arrived, everyone applauded until I stepped out. And they spotted that something had gone awry.
Right.
And they sent them back to get the real stars.
Okay. It is ironic because, you know, Akon has a history of Grand Theft Auto himself. That was the basis for his first hit song, Locked Up. Am I not right, Raphael Honigstein?
You might be.
I have to say that this all came about. We were just discussing Akon and his slapping antiques. Now, let's see. Fat men in tears as the grim news confirmed. Sport out of the Guardian five-a-side tournament. Barry, this took place yesterday. I think you have a little communique.
Yeah, well, I got an email from John Ashdown this morning saying, in case you fancied giving us a mention in the pod, which I don't particularly, but better. Eintracht Sport won the plate competition, which is for losers, first-round losers, I think, in the interdepartmental five-a-side, beating Olympic Sport 3-2 in the final.
Far be it from me to make an easy and cheap pun, but does winning the plate award mean that you went down very easily?
I don't get that.
All right, well, I'm sure somebody out there does. And Sport of what, presumably dropped a division now? You'll be playing five-a-side with Jackie and just 17 next year, is that right? Or... No. All right, but anyway,
that's good for harmony.
A fine day was had particularly by Raphael Honigstein, who is... bronzed but a little battered after your performances for the multimedia outfit.
Tan is all I took away from that competition.
You're looking Phil Brown-esque.
Yeah, thank you. We got knocked out in the quarters by a far superior team. But, you know, we gave it a go.
You beat Sport?
No. We were in the real
Producer Pete, who's on your side, insisted you did.
We did beat Sport, yeah, but okay. We were in the real half of the tournament, the ones actually playing to win the trophy rather than the shield.
Right. Okay.
And we got knocked out in the quarters.
Okay. Now, other football this weekend, top banner really of the final day was the one at Villa Park saying, who's your next messiah, Ant or Dec? As Newcastle wave bye-bye to the Premier League. Alan Shearer, despite his best efforts, all because of them, unable to save the Magpies.
Well, he hasn't really got any criticism. Despite the fact that he only needed to get 6 points from 8 games to keep them up, and he was unable to do that. But the fans were quite defiant in defeat, possibly because on their fan forums they had sort of maybe stressed the need that if the cameras are on you, please don't be a fat, topless man sitting in the stand weeping, because it just looks bad. But Shearer has his meeting with Mike Ashley this week sometime, and I'd say he's going to lay down a few ultimatums, and if he isn't offered exactly what he wants, he'll probably walk away, at which point things could get even worse for the club.
Hmm. As you say, nobody really wants to blame Shearer. However,
well, no one's really blaming Shearer. No one's blaming the fans either. And the fans,
Shearer, in fairness, he accepted a portion of the blame himself. He said, "We're all to blame." And you know, but just as he didn't save them, you can't heap all the blame on him either. And he accepted a portion of the blame. And it is interesting to try and foresee where they're going to go from here, because arguably the least well-equipped of the teams that went down to come back up, simply because you'd imagine almost their entire team will leave now. Partly they need them to leave because apparently they didn't have a clause in their contract to reduce their wages if they do get relegated. So for financial reasons, they need them to leave. But also because most of those players will probably get a game in other Premier League clubs. So they have to completely rebuild for next season, whereas West Brom, despite finishing bottom of the league, have a team that could come straight back up.
Indeed. They have 15 players, Newcastle, on $50,000 plus a week with no relegation clauses in their contracts. Their total wage bill is around £62 million a season. They will get a parachute payoff of, what, £11
million? £11 million, yeah.
Plus they save £1 million that they would have given to Shearer had he kept them up, so that's a bonus. But they do look royally screwed in terms of their finances next year, unless Ashley is willing to keep footing the bill for a club that he wants to get rid of anyway.
Most of those players, as I said, will get other Premier League teams because they formed a terrible, incoherent team, but there's a lot of good individuals there who, particularly with a World Cup year looming, will get a team in the Premier League, you'd imagine.
The players they have that they will be able to sell and get money for: Bassong, Bay, Barton, Colaccini, Gutierrez, Alan Smith, probably.
Barton, did you say?
Did you say Colaccini?
Yeah. Well? Yeah, but someone will pay money for them. Not as probably they'll make a loss, but it will be some money to come in. And then Owen will leave, Jeremy Butt will probably leave, Sisko, Viduka's out of contract. So they will get rid of a very large portion of their squad. Duff would still be there, probably a big earner. He might get sold on, but I don't know if people would, any club would be prepared to match the wages he's on at the moment. So he'd be well within his rights just to sit tight and pick up.
No, but with it being a World Cup year, Ireland may not get to the World Cup, but if Damien Duff chose to play in the Championship rather than take a pay cut, given that he's already incredibly wealthy, and that goes for several other players.
He chose to go to Newcastle originally rather than the club he supported as a kid, which is Liverpool, purely, I presume, only because of the money.
Newcastle were an ambitious club, and there was reason to believe that they were going to do better than they did this season. I mean, Shea Given stuck around for years because he thought that they were eventually going to get it together, and realised just in the nick of time that wasn't the case, and bailed out.
But regarding yesterday, though, everything else went right for them. All the other teams that they had to lose did, and they produced. They were spurred on to a second half performance that saw them take, I think, one shot on goal.
Yeah. All week everyone's saying there's going to be lots of twists and turns on the final day, and there just wasn't. And all of the teams down there played. Middlesbrough were wretched at West Ham. It was hard to believe they were fighting for survival. Hull beaten by United's reserves. And Newcastle, apparently they were good in the first half. In the second half, as I say, just seemed to resign to their fate.
They had some chances in the first half. In the second half, they looked resigned, as you say.
I think the thing about Shearer is he might not have done much, but there's a couple of things I think he got right and he's not getting credit for. One is the Michael Owen thing by being brave enough to drop him. Because when he came on yesterday, he was abject. He was worse than Andre De Sena at trapping the ball and keeping hold of it, and that's some call. And
in fairness, just on that sort of, Chris Hughton had dropped Owen earlier in the season, and that seemed to be the decision that made up the hierarchy's mind that he wasn't the man to get the job permanently. It was almost like when Hullett famously dropped Shearer at Newcastle years ago.
I mean, I think then that if that is the case, then it brings me on to the second point. The thing that Shearer, I think, has done quite well is just by whipping Ashley into some sort of shape, getting him to wear a suit. Get your feet off the desk, man. You're representing this club. And, these are sound like little things and probably not that important this season when the club's relegated, but it might help them next season if there's a bit more of a professional attitude about the place.
No, indeed so. Elsewhere in the dramatic final day at the bottom, Sunderland stayed up despite their defeat to Chelsea, and Ricky Spradger was then brought in front of the cameras to hang his head. Well, Niall Quinn explained that he would be no longer.
It looked like a headmaster who dragged an errant schoolboy in front of assembly, you know, to give him a ticking off. But he was actually praising Spraggia. He's stepped down now. Apparently, Gordon Strachan and Steve McLaren have both will not be getting the Sunderland job.
Oh.
Frank Rijkaard is one of the surprise.
Are you sure, Barry? Don't get his hopes up.
Pardon?
I said, are you sure? Don't get his hopes up.
My hopes up. And who's the favourite? Oh, Steve Bruce has been installed as the bookmaker's favourite.
I really think it's remarkable to see a Premier League manager come out and say, I'm not actually cut out for this job. I'm not quite up to it. I'll have to go and step back into a coaching role. And I think it's quite good for the club that there's a sensible man there who knows his limitations, because he'd be obviously picking up a lot more money getting fired next season when they're down in the relegation spot as manager.
Yeah, fair point.
But the thing is, he didn't actually want the job in the first place. He was the most reluctant, he was very reluctant to take it, but got it anyway, and, you know, he was very lucky that they stayed up.
Mm-hmm. Middlesbrough went down. Interesting stat there. Their top scorer was Tunçay with 4 goals.
Yeah.
Says a lot about that club. And Phil Brown FC, Hull, stayed up with 35 points. Is that the lowest points total that a team has ever managed to cling on to Premier League status with?
I think Bradford years ago got, was it 35 that they stayed up with as well?
Right.
I don't know.
They beat Liverpool in the last day.
All right. Well, naturally, he celebrated the magnificent final day performance, their latest defeat, 1-0 against United's reserves. With that magnificent karaoke performance out in the middle of the pitch. Scott.
Yes.
He's going to be in the Premier League next season. That's a good thing, isn't it, Scott?
Well, it is. If you don't feel queasy about watching a man unravel at speed, which I think is probably what's going to happen next year. We were wondering whether maybe come sort of Christmas time, he might be in a sort of special, comfortable room.
With soft walls.
Yeah, with comfortable walls.
Why do you say that, Scott?
Because yesterday's display was staggering, quite frankly. If there was any doubt whether the man has no shame, was all dispelled yesterday. I mean, as you say, 35 points, had lost. It wasn't even Manchester United's reserves yesterday. It was some sort of representative youth 11 from Greater Manchester area. And they've won one game out of the last 22, I think. You know, this is nothing to celebrate.
Right.
And you compare him to Ricky Spraggia, it's unbelievable. And they're not. I can't see them, the way he lost the dressing room, I can't see them doing anything next season. I think Derby County's 11,
record is
11 points.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow, okay.
But if I could just play devil's advocate here, because Phil Brown's been getting a lot of stick. If he had done the season in reverse,
yep,
everyone would be lauding him as the greatest thing since sliced bread.
Wouldn't he have been fired at Christmas, though?
Well, probably.
No, on the back of just like Arsene Wenger is still in a job at Arsenal on the back of achievements prior to this season and previous trophyless ones. Hull have come from the very bottom division in English football, and there's still guys in that team like Myhill and Turner who 4 or 5 years ago were playing the very bottom. So for them to stay up,
Phil Brown made that point, didn't he?
Well, yeah,
he probably did.
he made it by saying that he was going to get rid of half of them, and he wasn't going to name any of these players that are clearly not up to Premier League standard, but I'm getting rid of them. And it's not very difficult to like tick off a list of who he's probably talking about.
Yeah. Well, if he's lost the dressing room, he might as well get rid of them.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Yeah. All right, well, there you go. So goodbye and good luck, Newcastle, Middlesbrough, and, of course, West Brom. And later on today, we'll be finding out who the third team to take their place in the Premier League will be, alongside Wolves and Birmingham, of course, who are already coming up, as Burnley take on Sheffield United. But that's what's probably happening even as you download this, perhaps. We can't really comment too much about that. We will be talking about the other weekend playoffs in the Football League in a second or two. We'll also be talking about the German title race, which came to a spectacular conclusion. Raphael Honigstein was on hand to witness the events, and he's about to tell us all about that. Guardian.co.uk, as ever, your go-to website for all the latest on the world of football. Later on today, there'll be a little article there from Raphael Honigstein about the conclusion of the Bundesliga season. Raphael, you were in Munich.
I was in Munich, which was, of course, the wrong stadium to be in for the final game of the season because Wolfsburg won it. There was a replica of the trophy in Munich just in case either Bayern or Stuttgart were to win it on the final day of the season because they could still
They would
have
give
done
them a
replica
one to hold up.
Yeah, the real one always goes to the team who leads the table at the last day of the season, which was, of course, Wolfsburg.
So they don't have a Scottish-style helicopter lingering between the grounds? And
I
then
think the distances might be too big. I don't know.
Get a faster
Wolfsburg
helicopter.
To Munich.
The difference is they're willing to splash out on replicas.
Yeah.
Who wants to get presented with a replica?
I know.
It's just for show. I mean, every team who's...
Satanta were labelling yesterday.
Bayern probably have one of the real ones because you get to keep them after a while. But every team who's ever won it will get one replica to keep, and then the real one moves on.
Right.
Anyway,
can I just ask,
inflatable ones the fans have.
What was Satanta labelling yesterday's Scottish showdown?
They were calling it Helicopter Sunday.
Helicopter Sunday,
which I thought was amusing.
Yeah. No, we don't have Helicopter Saturday in Germany, but we do have a very worthy new champion, I think, with Wolfsburg, who won their last game 5-1. There's a lot of talk about them losing their nerves. Can they cope with the pressure? Well, they were very nervous for 5 minutes, and then they scored, and then they did the usual thing, which is completely steamrolling the opposition. They were only playing Werder, who were clearly still affected by the UEFA Cup loss, and also will have the German FA Cup final to look forward to on Saturday. But having said that, they're playing Leverkusen.
Right.
Having said that, they were yet again awesome, and Grafite and Dzeko up front have now scored 56 goals together, which is a new record in the Bundesliga. It's never been done by any striking partnership in the history of the Bundesliga.
And that's fantastic. And they, as you probably mentioned before, promoted to the top flight in 1997. They've never won, obviously, the top division title
before. I think
98, before.
James.
Was it? Oh, okay. Mm. And
anyway,
if we had to compare them to an English club, well, who would we compare them to?
It's almost impossible to find a club that falls into
this
category. Well, in a way, I mean, first of all, you have to realize that Wolfsburg is sort of the German Detroit, but much, much smaller. It's a town built around the Volkswagen factory. There's only 130,000 people living there. You know, it was built out of the ashes of the Second World War, and the team itself has never really done anything and never been in the top flight apart from the last 11 years or so. So I struggle to find any similarity. And of course, along with Leverkusen, they're one of the two allowed exceptions in the Bundesliga whereby a company can actually own a team and support them. All the other teams are owned by their members, or not owned by anyone at all, and can't be bought and sold like other teams. So these two can, and the reasons that were given when this decision was made by the Football League was that the two companies behind these teams, Leverkusen and Wolfsburg, have been involved with the clubs for so long, in Wolfsburg's case, over 40 years, that it's only natural that they should be able to support them more.
So they're going to be in the Champions League next year.
Yep.
But with what kind of lineup? Because Felix Magath's already gone to Schalke, who are not in the Champions League.
No, they're not even in the Europa League. Well, Armin Fee is taking over, who led Stuttgart to the Championship in 2007. He knows all about taking a team into the Champions League for the first time and then doing really, really badly. Well, people do fear a little bit for them because, of course, the three guys up front, Grafite, Dzeko and Misimovic, are wanted all over Europe. The good news is that we believe that Grafite, the Brazilian, who's taking home the Golden Cannon, which is the German version of the Golden Boot, with 28 goals, will probably extend his contract for another few years on Tuesday. But in the case of Dzeko and Misimovic, they are very, very much in demand, and I think it's going to be difficult for Wolfsburg to keep them.
Mm. Well, what happened to Hoffenheim? They seemed to fall away a bit towards the end of the season. Was that just because they didn't have a strong squad?
Yeah, there was a combination of things. One, they got terribly unlucky with injuries. I mean, they lost the main striker, Ibisevic, who'd scored 18 and 17 before the break. He was out with cruciate ligament. Then they lost a second and third striker as well for the opening game. And after winning the first game in 2009, They then went on to not win, I think, the 12 or 13 games afterwards. And it created sort of a negative atmosphere, a negative dynamic around the dressing room. People started talking about each other, pointing fingers. Rangnick was saying that some of the players didn't cope with the adulation, with the attention. You know, it was a bit like a circus before Christmas, because all of a sudden there were journalists from the Wall Street Journal and CNN, and everybody was descending on Hoffenheim doing a story. And perhaps it was a bit too much for all these players who 2 years ago were still playing in the amateur division.
Now, you were at Bayern Munich's game with Stuttgart, second versus third, in which Bayern Munich secured automatic qualification for the Champions League. And I bet there's all sorts of tasty rumours about, say, Frank Ribery leaving, maybe Mario Gomez coming in.
Yeah. Well, Mario Gomez is very much talking to Bayern and vice versa. They're having talks this week. Uli Hoeneß said he's very confident they'll be positive, which is really saying rather a lot.
Does he replace?
Well, that's the interesting thing. You can only really sign Gomez if you ship Luca Toni back to Italy, because he's on so much money. And the feeling is that Gomez at 23 is really the better a version of Luca Toni, who's 31, I believe, come next season, and who's been again having quite a bad game against Saturday on Saturday, missed an absolute sitter. Gomez will probably come. The question is, will Ribery leave? It was really astonishing to see him in the mix on afterwards. Lukas Podolski is, of course, off to Cologne, left with a giant poster of himself in a Bayern kit as a souvenir. And then Ribery came out a few minutes later, clutching a post of himself wearing a Bayern kit and going out with that. And it was very open, and everybody saw, and the inference was quite clear. And he was
quite
very,
a testimonial they give there.
Yeah, he was.
I'm surprised they weren't holding posters of Phil Brown.
No, they weren't.
There you go. That's fascinating. Elsewhere this weekend, there were the League Two and League One playoffs. Paul, you got first pick and chose the Gillingham-Shrewsbury game, which saw Gillingham, the one from Kent, that is, not Gillingham, from, I think it's Dorset. It was confusing me. Get into League One.
Yeah, it was...
Don't feel obliged to tell us, but was there anything interesting about this or no?
Well, what was interesting about it was the fact that Gillingham won, I guess, given that earlier in the season when they'd met in the league, Shrewsbury had beaten them 7-0.
Wow.
But they won't deserve it. So Shrewsbury froze on the big occasion, and Gillingham scored with a last minute winner from Simeon Jackson,
right?
Who actually had trials at Gillingham 4 years ago, and was told he wasn't good enough to play for the club, so he went off and joined Rushton and Diamonds. And like a lot of the Gillingham team, he was then fished from non-league football by the team who had previously turned him away for a costly fee. And he scored his 21st goal of the season, and now they're up in League One.
Magnificent
it
stuff.
It is magnificent.
Mm. Where they'll be meeting Millwall next season, because Millwall, of course, failed to escape the third tier of English football. They were beaten 3-2 by Scunthorpe in a fantastic playoff match Sunday afternoon. Barry?
Yes, Scunthorpe have made a lot of friends this season, particularly in the last couple of weeks. They've beaten MK Dons,
yep,
Leeds and Millwall, who are three of the most unpopular teams in the UK, if not the world. So I think a lot of people are very pleased for Scunthorpe, although the higher their profile gets, obviously their name poses certain problems with firewalls on the internet.
So it genuinely...
It does. We call them Fireball FC and right. Fiverr whenever we refer to them, because if you call them by their name, for right. obvious reasons,
because it has this... Yeah.
The Fiverr won't get delivered to some inboxes.
Well, that would be no bad thing in many ways.
Great. Scott, you were all over Scottish SPL drama yesterday, and indeed on Saturday.
Well, yes, yeah. I mean, unlike the English League, the relegation was at least vaguely interesting in that Falkirk needed to win at Cali Thistle, and did so, sending an incredibly depressed Terry Butcher down to the First Division, where he'll probably never, ever come back up. But the title race was a bit of nothing, really. I mean, Rangers were, for once, really impressive, I thought. They've not been very good all season, although they have finished strongly. They've won 9 out of the last 10. And played really well at Dundee United, where, again, that wasn't an easy... They'd won, I think, once there in 10 visits. Lafferty, from zero to hero, scoring the early goal. And Celtic, by comparison, were pretty dreadful. I mean, the Hearts keeper had a good match, but it's been Celtic's problem all year that they've been dominating games and not really scoring. Again, Aidan McGeady was doing some lovely stuff, but didn't really finish anything off. He was always a little bit... He was a bit unlucky yesterday, but it just seemed to be the story of his season as well.
Scott, have the Scottish clubs and the Scottish League profited from the reshuffling of the Champions League? Will they have an automatic starter next year?
Rangers go straight into the group stages, and straight back out again, I should imagine. but you know, I mean, this is the odd thing. I think Rangers historically have good years in Europe and then follow them up with incredibly bad ones. So obviously they got to the UEFA Cup final. Then I forget now who put them out, but they, you know, didn't even get to the qualifying in Champions League. So you know, they might do all right, but I just can't quite see it unless they buy about 12 players.
It was the big FC Kahoulas.
Ah, right.
Yeah.
How could I forget them?
Mm.
Is Terry Butcher the worst manager in the history of the game?
Yes.
Like, why?
Yeah.
When he arrived there, he had a very positive impact.
Yeah, no. When he turned up, they were rock bottom, way adrift, yeah. And they won about four or five out of six or seven games. I mean, it was looking as though they'd be, you know, for a while they might even creep into the top half of the split, but. But then it
still,
just
they were at home to Falkirk, and all they had to do was draw.
Yeah, it was not going to entertain men and not let in any goals.
Kyle Lafferty, so he was able to play despite his play acting last week?
Yes, because he said he's very sorry.
Excellent.
As everyone involved in Rangers this season has been saying at different times, they're really sorry.
All right, well done, Rangers. Much needed boost for them. Now, still to come on Football Weekly today, extraordinary events in Italy. The build-up to the Champions League final, and Sid on the line, and the odd post or two as well. Guardian.co.uk/footballweekly, the place to post your thoughts and comments on a top-rated podcast of Football Weekly. Pucciam responding to our Maldini love-in last week, saying, I saw Maldini call a throw-in against himself this season. None of the officials or other players had noticed it. He called it. I think that moment said a lot. This weekend, we mentioned it, saw Maldini's goodbye to the San Siro, Milan's game against Roma, and quite extraordinary scenes there, but not in a positive sense at all, as it turns out that there is a larger body of opinion that doesn't like Paolo Maldini, and it's amongst Milan's own fans. There was meant to be a kind of a celebration at the end of the game. He was going to speak to the fans, etc. But so livid were sections of the tifoserie with him. That was all cancelled, and he went off with a big scowl and shook off a consolatory arm that Leonardo was attempting to place around him. All very, very sad to see it end that way for him, although... Well, of course,
why don't they like him?
Right, well, basically, Maldini has not pandered to certain sections of the ultras in the way that perhaps some other players have, and not just at Milan but in other places, and he has openly criticised them on various occasions, notably in his autobiography. So as a result, there were various banners yesterday saying things like, lots of gratitude for your behaviour on the pitch, but off it, you haven't respected the people who've made you rich, that kind of thing. And I think particularly spiteful was the fact that there was then a big number six that was unveiled at the end. Instead of his classic number three, there was a big number six unveiled at the end, saying Franco Baresi was better, basically. There's only one real captain of Milan, and that was Franco Baresi, which is really unpleasant stuff, especially given the way the whole day started. I mean, we were building up to it last week, and they'd arranged scarves, and they were handing out all sorts of Maldini memorabilia on the way into the stadium. The Roma players came onto the field wearing shirts saying, thanks for everything, captain, which is pretty extraordinary, you know, for a sporting gesture for opposition player. And there's a salute to this one of the real greats, all-time greats of not just Italian football, but the game in general. And
did they then embarrass him on the pitch and score three goals?
Yeah, they did. They did. Yeah, it was 3-2. The final, which is of course a disaster for Milan because they are now at real risk of losing out on losing out on the automatic qualification for the Champions League. They're now third, level on points with Juventus, but Juventus have a better head-to-head record with them. Juventus, meanwhile, under Ciro Ferrara now, after Claudio Ranieri was fired last week, had a fantastic 3-0 win away to Siena, so that change has obviously worked wonders for them. Del Piero getting a brace. Milan next weekend are at Fiorentina, and if they lose by more than two goals, then they will drop to fourth, which would be pretty disastrous, because whoever is their new manager, and it looks pretty certain they will have a new manager, will then have to debut with some absolutely must-win Champions League playoff qualifiers. And, of course, Gilardino will be more than fired up for that game after his rough time at Milan. He's now firing on all cylinders there at Fiorentina. So it'll be a huge game next weekend. But all very sad that the way that the Maldini, the addio to Maldini was spoiled. Now, elsewhere, the relegation battle saw some very bitter scenes in Turin. Basically, we know that Regina and Lecce are both down, and it's either going to be Bologna or Torino, two of the more historic clubs, both won bags of titles, will be joining them in Serie B. This weekend, Chievo took on Bologna, and they had a 0-0 draw, which means that the Flying Donkeys are definitely up, and the two clubs, in the words of Francesco Mendonini, the Bologna president, didn't tread on each other's toes, whereas Genoa were at Torino, and they certainly did play for the win. They had a 93rd-minute winner scored by Diego Milito, who's off to Inter, of course, which infuriated the Torino players and management so much that there was a brawl, a 10-minute brawl after the final whistle. The Torino general manager was trying to get at his opposite numbers on the Genoa bench, and basically players were chasing Thiago Motta, the Genoa midfielder. Punches were being thrown, kicks. Fantastic stuff if you want to check it out on YouTube. But all very, very unpleasant. They were infuriated that Genoa presumably had played for the win, even though Genoa didn't particularly need anything from the game. Torino aren't out of it yet. They're going to be at Roma next weekend, while Bologna are at home to Catania, which looks like an easier game. Final game for Walter Zenger on the Catania bench there. A lot of talk that he's going to be joining Lazio next season. But it's going to be an extremely high-pressure final weekend there at the bottom.
There was a lot of what are known in the trade as suspicious betting patterns in a number of Serie B games over the weekend.
Really?
Yeah, like draws being priced at, you know, odds on when normally they'd be, you know, odds against. And yeah, so it's good to see the Italians are keeping the rend up as ever.
Wouldn't the draws be priced at odds on because of this proclivity for teams not treading on each other's toes?
Traditionally, bookmakers don't take bets on certain fixtures at the end of the season because it's just, you know pretty much what the result's going to be. Even if it hasn't been pre-arranged, there's this there will be a word exchange between the players. We've seen it even in a Rome derby, which is normally a very keenly contested affair. When there's been some mutual advantage to be had from a draw, generally a draw will out. And I think it's interesting the way that Torino reacted to Genoa actually going there and winning the game with this last-gasp header from Diego Milito, that they were absolutely infuriated that somebody should actually...
return the suitcase.
Yeah, return the suitcase. That was the penultimate weekend in Italy, all very exciting. And next up, let's dial Sid Lowe in Spain as we get a word on what's happening in the Liga. And, of course, a look forward to the big Champions League final. Now, Sid, exciting news as the season wends to a close there?
Yeah, there's all sorts of exciting things going on. Obviously, the big obsession in Madrid is what might happen in the presidential elections, and that's extremely messy at the moment. Big news in Barcelona is building up for the Champions League, but the big news for lots of other teams is what might happen at the bottom. And in particular, if you look at the final week, the situation is quite surreal. The two teams went down this weekend, guaranteed now. Both Numancia and Recreativa went down. And in a way, it feels like a bit of an anticlimax because I think we knew these teams were going to go down a long, long time ago. You know, these are teams that have both spent the biggest part of the season in the relegation zone. I think they've both spent 19 weeks so far of the season in the relegation zone. So that wasn't a big surprise. But now we've got one place up for grabs, five teams who could go down on the final weekend next weekend. And because of the way the league's fallen, the fixtures have fallen, five teams, all of whom depend entirely on themselves.
Hey.
Well, because you've got a couple of them playing each other.
Right.
And because of the way the Spanish league is set up with head-to-head goal difference being what finally decides.
Right.
So in other words, if teams finish level, it's not about overall goal difference, it's about head-to-head goal difference. Yeah. So you've got Osasuna, Sporting, Betis, Getafe and Valladolid all in trouble. All of them know that winning, they'll stay up, amongst other things, because you've got Osasuna. Well, Osasuna played Real Madrid, so that should be easy, because Real Madrid are the worst team in Spain over the last month, with four defeats, and I think it's 18 goals conceded. But you've got, because you've got Betis playing Valladolid, and because you've got Sporting playing Recre, Racing playing Getafe, the way the fixtures fall means that it's all in everybody's own hands.
Well, that's an excellent system. Is it right to say that fair play points may even have to be used?
Yeah, this is the thing that could be really entertaining. There is a possibility that the two teams occupying the final two places could be, I think it's Getafe and Osasuna, and those two would be level, depending on the way the results fall, and it's more than possible because of the way the results fall, that they would be, I think it's those two anyway, they would be level on points, they would be level on goals scored, they would be level on their head-to-head goal difference, and they would be level on goal difference. So it would then come down to the fair play table, and Getafe would go down.
And the other thing that's dominating the news there, I imagine, the Champions League final on Wednesday. Henry and Iniesta are due to play some role in the game. Is that right now?
They're due to join the rest of the teammates in training this week. Henry was actually already training to some extent with them last weekend on Saturday and Sunday. He did some training. It looks like he's going to make it. And Andres Iniesta, Pep Guardiola obviously publicly is saying things like, well, if Iniesta can't play, there'll be really, really good players there. But Guardiola is a genuine, genuine fan of Iniesta, well beyond just being his coach. Really, really thinks he's a key player. And Guardiola has said privately, it doesn't matter if it's only 5 minutes, that lad is playing.
Right.
So Iniesta, I expect Iniesta and Henry to start. The question mark is, to what extent are they fully fit? And I can't help thinking that if this wasn't a Champions League final, it was just a league game, we might not see them. The other thing that's interesting in this is that Barcelona have talked a lot over the last week about the possibility of Seydou Keita playing at left back. Hmm. And, you know, this is a driving midfielder. This is a sort of a box-to-box midfielder. Might play at left back. Keita, as I say, is a midfielder. He told Guardiola he doesn't want to play at left back. Guardiola has said publicly a couple of times, I'll try and persuade him. Now, personally, I think this might be a little bit of mind games, and it might be Silvinho in the end anyway. That physical presence is something that Guardiola is very concerned about, and that's why I think there's still a chance that he'll go for Seydou Keita at left back, just as he's gone for Traoré at centre back.
Right, with the worry that Keita might make a meal of it in the final. A pool.
That's very bad, isn't it?
I was going to ask you, Sid, actually, about the fullback situation, because, of course, they got both first-choice fullbacks out.
Yeah, and there's an irony here, which is that in the first leg of the semi-final, you notice that he left Carlos Puyol on the bench. And the reason for that was that both Puyol and Dani Alves had yellow cards, and Pep Guardiola didn't want to run the risk of having neither right-back available for the second leg of the semi-final. He's now got to a stage where he has got one of his right-backs available, which is obviously Carlos Puyol, but he's lost Abidal and Dani Alves, and Puyol, he'd have rather played him at centre-back, so he's had to do a whole load of shifting around, and it's genuinely problematic, in particular in the case of Dani Alves. And I know, you know, there was a little bit of a backlash, not least against me for having been foolish enough to say that Alves was the second-best player in the world once upon a time, after the game against Chelsea. But losing Alves is really, really important for Barcelona, not just offensively, because he's very quick, he's very aggressive, he can be a cheat when he wants to be, and that actually sometimes can be helpful, and I think he has that gamesmanship that perhaps some other players at Barcelona side lack, but also because of the way he gives them width on the right hand side, and I think sometimes Barcelona lack that little bit of width, and when his crossing's good, he's a really important player. Obviously against Chelsea, his crossing was absolutely shocking. Now I think what we may see is that Carlos Puyol will go up and down the wing quite a lot, but Barcelona are privately very, very concerned about the damage Manchester United can do. And Guardiola has been very, I think, very clear in recent weeks about talking about intelligence as to the way they approach this. Now, that won't mean defensive, because they'll still want the ball, but it will mean trying to protect themselves, because Guardiola, unlike the rest of Spain, believes that Manchester United are a counter-attacking side.
Hmm. What is the mood like there ahead of this game? Because in England, it does seem to be a question, if you listen to some people, of how many United are going to win by. Is it a pessimistic outlook from the Catalan press?
No, not really. I mean, there is the pessimism that says, hang on a minute, Manchester United are genuinely good. But it's more just the excitement of wow, what a way to end what's been a fantastically good season. I mean, Barcelona have have won the League and Cup double. They've played brilliant football all year. Their goal scoring record is out of this world, admittedly. I know we can go and argue about the level of the defences in Spain and so on and so forth. But it's really seen almost as the cherry on the icing on the cake, this final. And to some extent, while there is a desire to win it and a sense that, right, we've got to go and win it because this would be fantastic and it'd be a treble and all that, and there's a euphoria running into it, there isn't actually very much analysis about will we win. It's we must go and win, we should go and win, we want to go and win, but there isn't like, hang on a minute, we're up against, you know, a really good side, will we win, how will we approach it? It's just, we've got to go and do what we've shown all year we can do.
We look forward to hearing your reaction to the final on Thursday.
Yeah, it should be good fun.
You'll be on a train home from Rome, presumably, will you?
No, I'm not going to Rome, unfortunately.
No.
Have you ever heard the song Spanish Train, Sid?
I can't say I have.
I hesitate to recommend the Chris de Burgh song, but it's a classic.
Am I correct in thinking the Spanish Train goes from Guadalquivir to Old Seville?
Yes. Yeah.
Very good.
It's worth checking out.
Wow. We were about to finish this pod, but now that we've mentioned Chris de Burgh, I feel like going on and on and on.
Well, it's the devil and someone playing devil and
that's
God.
The devil went down to... that's a different one. Yeah, you're right. Lord, he's got to win. That's the Chris de Burgh song that haunted my childhood that you're daring to fling in my face now.
Could you Lady in Red was the Chris de Burgh song that haunted most people.
Anyway, Sid, thank you very much indeed. Enjoy the final. And we'll speak to you on Thursday.
Yep, speak to you then, Sid.
Thanks then, Sid. Yeah, indeed. And you guys being outed as Chris de Burgh fans, that was something I really didn't expect.
I heard a pub singer do a good version of Lady in Red on Friday night in my local pub.
Okay.
How many pints did you
It was actually better, a good version of Lady in Red.
Right.
He didn't want to smack him when he was singing it.
Okay. What was different about it, Barry?
I don't know. It was just his particular take, but it was an awful lot better than Chris de Burgh's version.
Right. He wasn't wearing a bow tie and smiling smarmily as he performed it, for a start.
No.
Right. But I would say there are inherent problems with that song. There is a smugness in the lyrics.
Particularly in light of what came to pass afterwards when it was discovered that Chris de Burgh was giving it to his nanny on the side.
Really?
Yes.
Allegedly.
Jeez, no, allegedly about it, he was.
I was not aware of any of that.
Oh, yeah.
Crikey. But anyway, Spanish
Train. Do you know Chris de Burgh's daughter is a former Miss World or Miss Universe or something? She's a socialite in Dublin now, sort of always pictured in nightclubs. She's or draped across the bonnets of sports cars or whatever. She's a model.
If I recall my old issues of Smash Hits correctly, he had a castle, did he not? He was one of those pop stars with a castle. They formed a small and exclusive enclave within the kind of contemporary music panorama. Brian Ferry, another. So who's going to play us out then with Spanish Train?
One, two, three.
I don't remember. The only bit I remember is the bit where he goes, "Oh Lord, he's got to win. 10,000 souls are on the line," or something. Do you remember that bit?
That'll do.
Yeah, I know. They were playing poker.
They're playing poker on a train.
Yes.
Right. With the devil.
For the souls of the dead.
For the souls of the dead. But there are only 10,000. Why?
Well, that was the... Maybe it was limited pot limit poker.
All right. No. So, not so much Lady in Red as Nanny in Bed.
Yes.
The big hit for Chris de Burgh.
Hold on, James. You were railing the other week about Frank Lampard's private life being exposed. Yeah. What did poor old Chris do to deserve this?
Do you know what? That's a fair point. Sorry, Chris. And with any luck, we'll get him ringing in, actually, in a vaguely threatening and aggressive manner, in Thursday's pod. Make sure you join us for that, listeners. Who knows?
Chris de Burgh, actually. Just
it's not over.
To give him his dues. He's a devout Liverpool fan. And, he once travelled to Germany, or maybe he was in Germany on a gig or something.
Yeah.
But Marcus Babbel
was... Perhaps it was his limo you stole.
No, Marcus Babbel was in hospital recuperating from that affliction he had. And amongst Chris de Burgh's many talents is he considers himself a faith healer. So he went to visit Marcus Babbel in hospital with a magic lantern, which assists his faith healing. And laid his hands on them, Babbel's. I think it was his knee, was it, that was damaged?
Oh, yeah, and, damage.
And lo and behold, where is Babbel now?
Babbel did recover despite the faith healing.
My word.
Manager of Stuttgart, of course.
Tell you what. That's the kind of gem you won't hear anywhere else, unfortunately. Magnificent. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Barry. Thank you, Scott. And thank you, Raphael. And thank you, producer Pete. We will be back on Thursday, and hope you'll be joining us then. Bye-bye.